Hello, everybody. This is Bill Cameron from The Drive. Podcasts of The Drive are presented by Southeastern Industrial Contractors, now hiring for great-paying skilled trade positions. Call 334-209-6355 to learn more. Thanks for listening.
The sports capital of Alabama. This is The Drive. The Drive with Bill Cameron and Dan Peck on ESPN 106.7 and online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of The Drive, call 334-321-1390, toll free at 888-382-7502, or email The Drive at ESPNAU.com.
Hello, everybody. Welcome in to the Thursday edition of The Drive. I usually mention, on a nice or rainy or whatever. It's like it's been pretty much everything today. Rained like crazy overnight. The wind has been howling during the day. Sprinkles come every once in a while, then the sun comes out. But it's sort of like a March day here as we approach mid-April. The wind should be drying things out. We did not have terribly severe weather. Are you bringing the trophy in? I saw it out there. We're running out of rooms on the shelves here with all the hardware that has been picked up by the Auburn network. It's crazy. I picked up some limbs, was doing some things outside. It was chilly, so I pulled on a long sleeve shirt, and the next thing you know, the sun's out and it's hot. It's just been crazy today. But hope everybody doing well here on this Thursday. Weather should cooperate, it appears, for baseball tonight.
Oh, it's beautiful right now, right? Some imposing clouds.
Across town, yeah. I mean, it was sprinkling.
Yeah, some imposing clouds in the distance here and there. It's not
supposed to rain anymore, actually. I mean, the forecast doesn't call for a very high percentage of rain at all. So it should be okay. I mean, a critical series for Auburn baseball as Kentucky, the co-leader in the SEC right now at 11-1, coming in. The Tigers 2-10.
How about this? A critical game for Auburn tonight.
Yes.
Because,
yeah, it is.
Because after losing to Alabama State midweek, not that you don't want to blow a midweek performance out of proportion at all, but that was an opportunity to gain some momentum going into a pivotal SEC series. And now, I mean, a lackluster performance tonight by Auburn on the heels of losing to Alabama State at home, and you are you're down. You're not down for the, you know, we don't know if you're down.
You're not completely out.
We don't.
You're,
yeah,
but you're definitely you're down.
And
the count is started.
I was gonna say, dare I say, down for the count? Like you maybe you got a chance to get up. You got a chance to, you know, to get the standing eight count and get back in the fight. But a loss tonight, a poor performance tonight, knowing the stakes of this series, knowing that Auburn they're running out of opportunities, and Kentucky, an overwhelming performance by Kentucky this weekend could put Auburn in a very, very tough position to stay alive in conference play with, well, they'd be at the halfway point at the end of this, right? The 15th.
This weekend, after Saturday, Auburn will be halfway done.
And it feels like they need to go.
If they don't win, they may just be done.
Yeah. It feels like 4-11 would be, you don't want to be doing victory laps at 4-11 necessarily, but you did win a series this weekend against Kentucky. If you're 4-11,
yeah, they need to just win a series and then see if they can win another series. But the first thing they need to do is win a series, and the best way to do that is to win game one, and tonight is game one.
So do you think there's
6:30 first pitch tonight?
Do you think there's the expectation tonight, maybe all series long, that it is inning by inning they will evaluate?
That's what Butch said last week, that it had come to, and I don't see that changing any for this week.
You want to avoid guys having to inherit
second time through a lineup.
Well, second time through a lineup, and you don't want guys having to step in and inherit runners. You'd like guys to be able to start and finish clean innings. So that's yeah, it's gonna be, it's gonna be. What do we know what they're doing tonight? As the
I had not heard. I was,
let's see if I can get pitching matchups.
Let's see if I've gotten something from George. I don't know that. Yeah, here we go. No, this one doesn't have the rotations. So I don't know. I'm sure Auburn knows what they're doing. Who they're going with tonight. But yeah, we'll We'll see. Again, it's a 6:30 first pitch. I'm heading over there. I went ahead and dressed for baseball.
One of several reasons we could be talking about Kentucky on today's show.
How about How about Scott Drew and Dan Hurley have now pretty much officially said no, they are not leaving. They're going to stay. So where does Kentucky go next?
Well, as we said yesterday, it is not just Alabama fans and trolls on social media suggesting that Bruce Pearl is a candidate for Kentucky or would be a logical candidate for Kentucky.
I've got the schedule starters.
Okay, let's get the starters out there.
Dylan Watts,
talk some more
Dylan
about
it. Watts will get the start. Is scheduled to get the start for the Tigers tonight. The sophomore righty, without a decision thus far, with a 5.65 ERA going up against Trey Pooser, who is 3-0 with a 3.38. Chase Alsup scheduled to get the start tomorrow. Alsup, who had been, started the season as Auburn's Friday night starter, it will get the Friday night start 1-2 with a 7.11 ERA. So those are the schedule starters, and then Saturday's TBA.
Okay, so Kentucky's vacancy with mm-hmm. Scott Drew putting out a statement, UConn coming to terms with Dan Hurley on a new contract today as well. You had the Nate Oates statement earlier this week. I would say Aaron Gershon, who we've cited before, he's the 24/7 guy, one of the 24/7 guy, the primary basketball 24/7 guy for Kentucky for Cat's Paws 24/7, and they are he says attention likely turns to Billy Donovan. I would assume Kentucky's tier two list includes
this is him saying this. This not is
Aaron
you saying this.
This is Aaron Gershon. Okay. This is a quote from Aaron Gershon about 2.5 hours ago, saying that this is in the aftermath of Scott Drew making it official that he's staying in Waco. Attention turns to Billy Donovan. I would assume Kentucky's tier two list includes Bruce Pearl, Sean Miller, Brad Underwood, Shaka Smart, Mark Pope in some kind of order. I can't see Chris Beard after what happened to end his time at Texas, unquote. So that's 24/7 writer for Kentucky, plugged into the program, speculating about...
First name he mentions after Billy Donovan is Bruce Pearl.
Billy Donovan coaching an NBA playoff game most likely next week, a play-in game to get to the NBA playoffs, but the Bulls season could end soon, in which case... Billy Donovan at the moment is not – he's not turning the job down publicly, but he's sort of saying that his focus is on finishing out the season for the Chicago Bulls and seeing where this team could go if they make the postseason in the Eastern Conference. Maybe Kentucky keeps the job open until Billy Donovan can have a more focused look at the opportunity, or maybe time is of the essence right now. This is a pivotal month for basketball recruiting. So maybe Kentucky needs to go to someone who's available soon and sooner rather than later. Not just the 24/7 guy from Kentucky suggesting Bruce Pearl. We talked about, was it yesterday's show? We mentioned Seth Greenberg had been on Get Up saying that there are excellent reasons why Bruce Pearl would make sense for Kentucky. He was advocating for it. Jeff Borzello, in his update behind the paywall for ESPN, is it still ESPN Plus?
Yes.
Is that what you say?
Yeah,
even on the app, like the stuff that's still behind the okay. So Jeff Borzello, who's an excellent college basketball writer for ESPN, he's speculating who's next on the carousel list. And Bill, what would you say? It stands out about the picture.
That's a picture of Bruce.
That's a picture of Bruce ESPN app there at the top of the Jeff Borzello article about the coaches who could be next. And he writes about Bruce. Let me see here. Auburn's Bruce Pearl is a logical name. He knows the league, he has the personality, and he's likely attainable. But he also hasn't advanced out of the first weekend of the NCAA tournament since 2019, and he's 64 years old. Barnhart's targets thus far have all been several years younger.
Now we
unquote.
Oh, that is true. That is true. The another name that we had heard. I wondered. Remember Ralph Sampson's name? Not Ralph Sampson. Kelvin Sampson's name was mentioned early on, but really haven't heard anything more since the job. came open.
Sampson, Pitino, both guys who I would think that one of, if not the primary thing keeping them from being a candidate.
Is their age.
Is that they're both, I think Sampson will turn 70.
And Rick's 71 or two.
And Rick Pitino is 71 years old, so I think those are both candidates who maybe the age is part of the problem. Borzello also mentions, he talks about the scenario of Barnhart waiting for Billy Donovan's season to end in Chicago. He talks about Shaka Smart. He talks about Mark Pope. He talks about Sean Miller at Xavier. He talks about T.J. Otzelberger at Iowa State. And he speculates on Chris Beard and Brad Underwood as well, Ole Miss and Illinois coaches Chris Beard and Brad Underwood. But I think, you know, Pearl's the biggest name, I would say. Pearl and Shaka.
Billy Donovan.
Which if Donovan is off of, because we'd heard at the very beginning, you know, Trilly Donovan had said on social media at the very beginning, Hurley, Drew, and Donovan in some order was the wish list for Mitch Barnhart.
That would leave Billy D at the top.
That leaves Donovan if indeed, and it certainly appears, yeah. I mean the UConn, what Fox Sports has the Fox has the deal with the Big East, and Fox Sports has the exclusive about the UConn contract extension with Dan Hurley, which includes apparently it's the wish list of what you would want after winning a second straight national championship. If you had superpower, Bill, if you were Dan Hurley, and you were sitting there, you know, with the new I may have just said Billy Donovan, but if you're Dan Hurley and you just win national championship number two at UConn, and superpowers are making coaching changes this offseason and may be interested in you. And you come to UConn and say, you know, here's what I would like. Here's the list.
Oh yeah,
the wish, and he's getting all of it.
Like, absolutely, that's
he is. Understandably so. You know, mm-hmm. if ever somebody deserves it. So yeah, he's not getting poached away this cycle at least. And then that leaves with Scott Drew putting out the announcement today. That leaves Billy Donovan most likely as the candidate people will talk about the most until we get a firm answer one way or another, or Mitch Barnhart could be working behind the scenes on somebody who's not talking right now.
I'm sure he's not just waiting and not doing anything until Billy Donovan's done.
He's not going to scramble, you know, if he hears a firm no from Billy Donovan once the season is over. And maybe Billy Donovan's not the primary candidate.
Maybe Billy Donovan is going to do it, and they just can't say anything until he's done with the Bulls.
Maybe Billy Donovan is going to leave the moment Chicago's season ends and take the Kentucky job. And I think the longer the job stays open, that's going to seem more and more like the plan. At the same time, there are other coaches who and Bruce's. I mean, we pointed out Bruce's silence on the matter in light of other coaches who had made statements reaffirming their commitments to their schools. Bruce isn't the only one people are wondering about silence wise. As far as, you know, there are other head coaches. Jeff Borzello just named about four or five other major conference head coaches that could be candidates for Kentucky. I don't know if any of them have come out and said, it's not going to be me at Kentucky.
Well, they generally have to be asked by somebody.
They generally have to be asked first.
And you have to, there has to be access
now
for
people,
them to be asked.
People are skeptical. I mean, I've heard some skepticism that Nate Oates was genuinely approached Sunday night.
I think Nate Oates was
a possible
target. It's hard for me to think that he wouldn't have been.
For sure. I think
look at what he has done there at Alabama in a short time.
Look, Scott Drew has a national championship and the other two guys don't. But I think in the case of Scott Drew, in the case of Nate Oates, and in the case of Bruce Pearl, what they've been able to do at a place where the fan base is generally, how do I put this, Bill? Indifferent about basketball? The fan bases had been historically.
What are Baylor fans not indifferent? I mean,
sure. No.
What is Baylor's power?
But look up Baylor.
Pre-Scott Drew men's basketball at
Baylor.
But over in Alabama, you know what the main priority has been.
Well,
at Baylor, I don't know that. I guess it's just Baylor hasn't been good enough for there to be a rabid fan base around a sport.
No, I mean they've won some championships in women's basketball. You know, Kim Mulkey had success there before coming over to LSU. But you're right. It's not a place. It's a place that had that without football success too.
Right.
Like that's where, you know, you look at Auburn and Alabama. But in all three cases, there had not been a track record of being a perennial contender as a basketball program. Those three coaches have accomplished that at their places. I can totally understand. In the case of and Bruce a little bit older than the other two, but in the case of Scott Drew, in the case of Nate Oates, in the case of Bruce Pearl, I would totally understand why Kentucky would say, look at what they did at a place that doesn't have Kentucky's resources, X, Y, and Z, doesn't have Kentucky's history, doesn't have Kentucky's this, doesn't have Kentucky's that, and think, we could lure that coach there, and he could do... I mean, it's sort of the thinking that got Kentucky Billy Gillespie. And I know that failed pretty spectacularly by Kentucky standards, but it wasn't... Just because it failed doesn't necessarily make it the wrong plan. You might have just had the wrong person.
Yeah, there are questions about, you know, Billy being out of college basketball for the last 9 years, the NIL situation now, the transfer portal.
Billy Donovan.
Yes, Billy Donovan.
I was talking, remember when?
I know, but I'm saying if people think that's a reach or something, here's a guy. I mean, that's what I hear people saying. Yeah, but he's been out of college basketball for a long time.
I would, you know what? If Donovan came back to basketball at a place that has had historically has had a hard time getting players, I would say, ooh, he might be stepping into a thing where it's, you know, he's going to have to work really hard to recruit, or he believes that his, you know, it's the Charlie Weiss schematic advantage is going to be enough because you were in the pros for the last couple of years. At a place like Kentucky, I think Billy Donovan would get the kind of roster he wants.
I think so too.
And there are some folks listening who maybe don't, you know, they don't know all that much about Billy Donovan as a college basketball coach. They know, you know, it's been a decade.
So that's true. Nine years. Yeah.
He was one of the absolute best when he went to the
really
NBA.
Was.
And if a superpower got a motivated and happy Billy Donovan to come back to college basketball, I think they would be.
Well, I wonder how. You know, how happy he is in the NBA. You think Bulls fans are going to be just torn up if he's not their coach?
No.
So much of the NBA seems based around, like, who you have on the roster.
I mean, not the college.
I mean, college basketball is, too. I mean, basketball in general is, you know, inherently dependent on your talent. But in the NBA, it just feels – I mean, he's – look, I don't know. Maybe he loves it. Maybe he's absolutely thrilled with the NBA. I have to imagine –
Maybe he doesn't want to recruit.
But that's
one of the reasons why a lot of coaches, especially in college football, have decided, oh, let me see if I can go to the pro level.
I would if it were Kentucky, I would not. Now, if he were going to like a Big East, like a dormant Big East program and trying to revive them or something, if Georgetown hired him, I would say, ooh, this could be a tough one for even for a genius like Billy Donovan. It could be tough to revive DePaul. Or Georgetown or something like that. I don't know if that was going to happen. I think if Kentucky lines up behind Billy Donovan, they'll be absolutely fine. And I do worry about how often Bruce Pearl's name gets tossed around as a guy who makes sense.
And it should until Kentucky has a coach, regardless of who it is. I mean,
or until
Bruce Pearl says, I'm not in the running. I'm not in the picture. I'm staying.
Yeah, you get one or the other. I think either you get an announcement that Kentucky has hired a coach, and you know whether it is or is not Bruce Pearl, or you get a statement from Bruce Pearl sort of reaffirming that he is Auburn's coach, and there's no smoke to this situation at all. Now there has been a statement from somebody regarding Auburn basketball in the last year.
Our buddy from Tiger Takes, Dylan Cardwell.
A good buddy, Dylan Cardwell, who put out a video on social media with reciting the Auburn Creed, and then at the end mentioning that he's got some unfinished business and that he will be back for his final year of college basketball. So Auburn returning.
So that is one big piece returning. You know, hopefully the other one.
Literal.
And Janai Broome does.
Literal and
figurative.
Yeah, that is a piece in more ways than one. A big piece that Auburn brings back to the roster. And a nice addition, a nice retention for the Auburn coaching staff to get Dylan Cardwell back.
Mm-hmm. We need to get to our first break. We'll update you on the Masters first round. There's some good scores that are being put up over there. As things dry out, the wind still, man, I don't know that all of the wind has gotten there yet. It's going to be a bit of a
Some of it's getting all the way over here, right?
Oh, it is. It is breezy here on this Thursday. But we're back. Love for you to join in. You can give us a call on the Drive Hotline, 334-321-1390. And that is the Drive Hotline presented by Skybar.
can also text the show, 334-564-1840 on the Drive text box, presented by our friends at Southeastern Industrial Contractors. They also sponsor the podcast, available however you listen to podcasts.
Come on in and join us as we continue with the Thursday Drive.
It's time and online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of the Drive, call 334-321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502 or email the Drive at ESPNAU.com.
Welcome back into the Drive here on this Thursday. I mean, we were talking, it was beautiful a couple of minutes ago. Now it is cloudy.
Oh, boy.
But
sweater,
yeah,
sweater weather.
You can see, look at the greenery waving in Augusta there in the background.
A little misty rain falling on DeChambeau.
Well, I mean, I'm not surprised. I mean, it's supposed to all be out by this evening or tomorrow. But Bryson DeChambeau in the clubhouse with a 65, and he just sits and watch. Everybody else, there's a group that's been battling, going 4-under, 3-under, 4-under, 5-under, 4-under. Right now, you got three golfers at 4-under. Danny Willett is in the clubhouse with a 68, so he's 4-under. Scottie Scheffler is through 14, and Will Zalatoris through 16. Each of those guys at 4-under.
Yeah, Jack, the big. Bill, you got to do Tiger Woods too, because when you're doing,
well,
when Tiger's in the field, you know the rules, you know the Tiger rules.
I was just watching everybody's. It's funny on different holes how much the wind is blowing. Just depends on where you are, how many trees are just behind.
Tiger is one of several prominent names at even par. Right now, Tiger is through five, I believe, on the course. Yeah, Tiger's even par through five. Still got more golf to play. The ESPN broadcast, and I believe the ESPN Plus. I think ESPN Plus has a feed dedicated to just following Tiger around if you just want to watch his 18 there. But you can also watch the Masters coverage on ESPN, which will have a lot of that. Let's see some of the other big names hanging out at even par right now. Sergio Garcia, Justin Thomas, John Rahm, Patrick Reed, Adam Scott, Phil Mickelson is one over. Who else we got in the my guy Patrick Cantlay, UCLA Bruin is tied for 16th at one under. You know, I almost taught a class he was in when I was a grad student at UCLA. Like they had six grad students and like 90 undergrads, and the undergrads got sort of randomly assigned to the graduate students.
Uh-huh.
And another one of the grad students got Patrick Cantlay in their class.
Oh wow!
And now he's like, a golf champion, which would have been, it's, you know, I can take a little bit of credit for his success.
Near miss, and close.
Rory's at 2-under, just off the, I think we're looking at a little bit of Rory coverage right now. As a matter of fact, on ESPN, as he looks to, it's been a while, I think, since Rory has won a Grand Slam, but he is always like he's always near the top of the odds for to win these things. I think the skill is still clearly there, and it's just a matter of putting it together. But McIlroy is just outside the top five right now.
Yeah, so we'll keep you updated as we continue through here today. Now tomorrow,
speaking of which,
yeah, tomorrow we're going to be over at Baumhauer's over at Bent Creek, both on the line with Jacob and Uncle T-Bone, and the Drive. We'll both be there. Coach Don Dunn's going to join us as well. So we'd love for you to come out. We'll be keeping up with the Masters and talking whatever you'd like sports wise tomorrow over at Baumhauer's.
And there could be big news.
Brought to you by SenseGreen.
There could be big news in the next couple of days. I mean, we're waiting on the announcement from Janiah Broome one way or the other after getting the Dillon announcement today. Kentucky's job opening could fill at any point, and that could be. I would not rule out, Bill, and I don't even know who this coach would be. Right, Mitch Barnhart, with a job opening like Kentucky, he could go pull a Brian Kelly out of his hat, right? Like he could go.
You just wonder who that might be.
I don't know who that would be. You know, somebody, Tony Bennett. Like that's not. I mean, it doesn't feel like Kentucky style. you know, to go get a you know, to go bring in somebody like this. Not exactly like that's fit wise. That feels like a bit of an odd one. But yeah, you know, Kentucky going and getting a big name who seems secure wherever they are would be. We'll see if that's on the table. You know, we were just talking about the possibility of Bruce being a candidate for that job.
334-321-1390. That's the Drive hotline sponsored by Skybar. Let's get to it. And John is up first. Hey, John.
Hey, good afternoon. If Auburn is playing baseball this afternoon, it'll be interesting because on the way home, it took all I could do to hold my car in the road.
The wind is blowing. Yeah, I mean, it has been howling, and it'll slack off a little bit and then just, I mean, burst. So, yeah, it's going to be an adventure for anybody with any ball that's in the air.
Yes, sir. As far as Bruce goes, I think he'll stay at Auburn because he's 64 years old and I think he likes living in a small town and the environment. But having said that, Bruce owes his job to someone who's no longer there, and that's Jay Jacobs. I think he was loyal to Jay. So if you know they dropped a huge amount of money, and I'm, you know, there's nothing's impossible to happen, and he would be a monster at Kentucky with his personality and the ability to recruit even better than he does now.
Yeah, and I was talking with our GM, as a matter of fact, a little while ago, and he was saying, you know, that there's no way Bruce loves Auburn, and I believe no question Bruce loves Auburn, and Bruce is very thankful for the opportunity he's gotten at Auburn. Bruce is still, though, very much waiting and expecting a practice facility and, you know, wanting to know that Auburn can compete with anyone NIL-wise. And I would say those are a couple of big chips that he has in his favor. In Kentucky, also, they swing a big stick. I mean, that's something, if they call, you have to listen.
So do you think the NIL is going to fall back more on the lay fan like ourselves who buy tickets, or is it still going to be
I still think the majority of the NIL space is controlled by boosters who can give sort of eye-watering amounts of money as opposed to rank-and-file fans paying a subscription fee every month. And you know, a lot of this is speculation. But yeah, I mean, when you're hearing it sounds like a lot of the NIL involvement that has John Calipari excited at Arkansas is two guys giving a whole bunch of money so that Arkansas can replenish the roster right now. Because as John Calipari pointed out, there is no roster, there is no team, as he, you know, in his introductory press conference. But yeah, no, I still am highly skeptical that the average Joe is making you know, contributions from the working class are making too big of an impact on a school's NIL position.
The reason I say that is because I get like an email every other day about joining On to Victory, and you see them advertising all the facilities and ballparks
they're very proud of the work they're doing at War Eagle Plus, you know, to try to give someone, you know, try to give people something for their dollar. With the On to Victory subscriptions and things like that, but it's still a lot of it's sort of generosity based.
Yeah, I know all fan bases have alumni with a large, you know, prosperous members like Auburn does, but when you're talking about the Waltons and the CEO of Tyson, and then you got the also Jerry Jones is a graduate of Arkansas.
I believe FedEx too.
And there are families, and then in Kentucky, there are families that have been donating to that program for centuries, right? I mean,
generations.
Yeah,
sure.
Generation. And not to mention, a pretty significant contributions come from the 30 or 40 years of NBA players who have been going to Kentucky and then going to the NBA. I mean, that's a program. I don't know, Bill, is there? I mean, if you're talking about sending players to the NBA, is there a program that has done that more successfully over the last 30 or 40 years in college? Maybe Duke,
but
Kentucky has sent a lot. I mean, Kentucky has sent a lot of players who have done very well for themselves.
Yeah, that's one of the things that Cal, you know, really bragged about, and Kentucky fans wanted to see more wins in the tournament. But I mean, there's no question that they have had some great NBA talent that come and spend and time, with, many times, short times.
And as Auburn baseball learned with Josh Donaldson, when you produce a player and he goes and makes nine figures as a professional athlete, sometimes some of that can come back to the program in the form of a contribution. It's happened with Kentucky and some of the players that they've sent to the NBA, and that's another reason why they're as well positioned as they are. A lot of folks think it is in a vacuum the single. What would you say about Kentucky? Like, what's going too far? Is it the best job in college basketball? Is it? Do you have more resources than anyone else as the coach?
I don't know.
How would you describe? I would say is it in the tier of the best jobs?
Yes.
Like that's
no
I mean,
question.
Yeah, that's. I mean, that's. I don't want to overstate it, but I don't want to undersell how significant this opening is.
So, changing gears for a second, what led to Indiana's falling off a cliff as far as their spotlight in basketball?
I think it's the wrong coach. A couple times you hire the wrong coach, a couple times in a row, and it's similar to, how relevant was Tennessee under Phil Fulmer, right at their peak, and then after making a couple of questionable moves in a row as to who's leading the program, among other things, changing, some programs don't. And it's odd because the state of Indiana still produces a lot of talent, that especially at the college basketball level.
But had Indiana been pre Bob Knight, were they a Kentucky, a UCLA, a North Carolina? I mean, Duke actually came on with Coach K. I mean, Duke was not a school that had won titles decade after decade after decade the way Kentucky and North Carolina and UCLA had.
It's important to remember sometimes a program's success can actually just be what one coach's success.
I think a lot of that was, yes, Bob Knight and the game changing and times changing and Indiana not able to find that next guy.
They did win some conference titles in the 50s and 60s, but they did not have the kind of success they had under Bob Knight until Bob Knight got there.
Is Bobby Hurley, would he have any shot at all coming out of as a dark horse for that Kentucky job?
Well, you're talking about Dan?
I'm talking about Bobby.
Well, Bobby, I think the problem there would be that he's not winning enough at Arizona State to get Kentucky folks excited. I mean, there's a belief that sort of, you could make the Gene Chizik argument that if he, a lot of that is circumstantial, and if he had the right program in alignment, he could win a lot. I still think that there's. I mean, he's on the hot seat as it is Arizona State. Like, I'd be surprised if Kentucky, explored him. Not that I don't. I mean, look, he could win in the right situation, but I think that the struggles of his the struggles the last couple of years in Tempe are gonna cool him off as a candidate for this job.
All right. Well, I appreciate y'all's time. Y'all have a good afternoon.
Appreciate the call, John. Yeah, we need to get to break. When we come back, let's see, there's some recruiting news. We talked about Dylan Cardwell returning. There could be some more good news basketball-wise, some football recruiting news as well, and more. Come on in and join us here on the Thursday Drive.
7 and online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of the drive, call 334-321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502 or email the drive at ESPNAU.com.
Welcome back into the drive here on this Thursday afternoon. Bill and Dan, Drew at the controls. Love for you to join in. You heard the number. 334-321-1390. Anything that you want to talk about sports-wise. All right, we talked a little while ago, Dylan Cardwell announcing he is returning to Auburn basketball next year. That is big. I think very big news today from J.P. Pegues. He is not going to visit Florida. I think that is a big-time good news for Auburn. Where he visited and gave rave reviews after that visit this past weekend. I wouldn't be surprised if he announces his commitment to Auburn very soon.
Auburn looks to be the leader for the Furman guard, who has played a lot of college basketball, coming in looking to be an experienced lead dog at point guard, I think, for this team if they can land him. And it would be it's a talented player at a position where the right guy can change a lot.
Oh, and there's obviously a path to a lot of playing time for Auburn since both of their point guards from this past year have entered the portal.
24/7 put a crystal ball in for JP Pegues to Auburn in the last few hours, mm-hmm, as well. And Pegues would be one year left on his in his college basketball career. Listed, Bill, and we were talking about this with the Jared comparisons. Listed at 6'1", 165. I think that's maybe a bit of an exaggeration based on having seen him a couple of times at Furman. Stylistically, though, this is the kind of guy where if you're worried about the size, he uses it to his advantage, right? He's able to use whether it's off the dribble or whether it's his ability to pull up and take quick shots. Like he makes it work, and I think he's going to be he'll be a fan favorite and the kind of guy that. Is reminiscent of some of the best point guards Bruce has had at Auburn. I'd be very excited if Auburn pulls off the JP Pegues thing, and it looks like they're in the lead for Pegues at the moment.
Yeah, he is. He's not all right. One of the things we had talked about, it would be nice for Auburn to have somebody that was a really good penetrator, could take the ball to the basket. He's not known as, that's not his strength. I mean, he can do it. But he's a scorer. He's a shooter. He's been a really good three-point shooter.
Attempted more threes than twos, yes, in both of his seasons as the primary guard for.
So does he have 1 or 2 years?
He would be a fourth year. He came in the year after the COVID year. He would be a fourth year senior next year.
Okay,
so he's one year left.
Okay. Played three. Okay.
Yes.
I wasn't sure if he'd played two. I'd seen his stats for 2 years. I wasn't sure if he'd played three.
Came off the bench in 21-22 as a true freshman, okay, and has started 66 games the last two seasons as a guard for Furman in the Southern Conference. This past year, shot 36% on 229 attempts from three. So not afraid to not afraid to bomb it. That's about one every 4 minutes that he played.
That's putting it up.
So he shot this past season at Furman. He shot a 3-pointer about once every 4 minutes he was on the court. Hit about 36-37% of them. That was up from his first year as a serious contributor when he shot 34% from three. So I think this is a guy who will be relied upon to do a lot. And there's also the other non-shooting aspects of what you do as a point guard, but I think Pegues would fit right in for what Bruce is looking for at that position.
Yeah. Now the other guy that makes you wonder if Miles Rice will still visit Auburn.
Now that I've said all this, Auburn would probably watch.
Well, Rice is the other kind of point guard. I mean, he's a guy that is more of a penetrator, a guy I've heard some folks saying, you know, Auburn needs a guy that plays the kind of game that Mark Sears can take the ball to the basket, draw fouls, or dish off for baskets. And that's more Miles Rice style. But it's very unlikely that anybody's going to get both those guys because they'll need more minutes than you have available.
Yeah, they're both looking to play more than they will if they both go to the same school. I think that whoever gets either Miles Rice or JP, in the case of Auburn, if you land one of them, you're probably out on the other, which is understandable because the one you get is looking like a 25-30 minute player. And then the question is, can Auburn, what do you do with the other? Let's say you bring in a point guard and he plays 30 minutes a game. What are you doing with the other 10? Is it Pettiford?
That's a really good question.
Is it Pettiford and Jones? Do they need a new guard?
I think they could use another. I just don't know. Is it somebody you get from high school?
I keep saying junior college. If you can find I make it sound like Javon McCormick's
are you going to find many junior college starting point guards to come in and play 10 minutes a
You're
game?
Right. No, you would probably need to be the guy's only SEC offer. You'd probably need to be maybe even the guy's only major conference offer, right? In order to get him to buy into, we just brought in a, like, let's say Auburn gets Pegues. You know, if you're trying to recruit another point guard to the team after landing JP Pegues from the portal, you know, you have to be real and say that this upcoming season, if Pegues is healthy, he's probably playing 25 to 30 minutes. You're looking for someone who's going to fit in as someone who can produce when Pegues needs to take a break. There are ways that you could get more playing time than that, but you're right, it's not necessarily easy. And if Auburn can find someone who is open to that, either last year of college basketball and they want that opportunity, or we've speculated on, well, maybe it's somebody who they'd like to spend a year as the understudy and then compete, especially with Pegues. Now with Rice,
almost sounds like it's more likely to be a freshman, a high schooler.
It could be, yeah. Now with Rice, the eligibility is a little bit murkier, right? Because I believe there's a hardship waiver year involved as well. So I know Rice has more than 1 year.
Yes, he does.
Of eligibility remaining, so it wouldn't be the same sort of thing. But with Pegues, you could at least say this is we know it's going to be JP's final year.
Yeah, playing time will open again next year,
and the competition reopens the following season.
All right, and then a football note. Alvin Henderson, the running back from down in Elba, committing to Penn State today. He was on campus, I believe, for the A-Day game. He was in town for practice the last couple of times that the media was able to go out to practice. Auburn's been recruiting him for a long time, but he commits to Penn State. We'll see. I don't know that that's critical. Auburn's got a really good situation there at running back, and there are some other options there at running back. But, I mean, that's got to feel like a little bit of a disappointment to some fans who followed a kid from down in South Alabama that Auburn has been on for a long, long time.
You had heard rumors that Penn State was trending up.
Yep.
In the last couple of days.
Yeah, and so James Franklin has landed, or at least has a commitment from the four-star running back from down in Elba.
Want to pass along to our buddy who sits right behind us in the press box, Justin Hokanson. Pointing out on social media, I think other people may have had this too. I just saw it first from Hoke that Miles Rice is not visiting.
Well, that's what I said. I mean, with the Pegues news, yeah, it looked like that was going to be the answer for Auburn there, as far as the established portal transfer.
And I wonder if some of the other schools that were on Pegues' list maybe turn their attention to Miles Rice now.
Or, yes, I'm sure.
Florida, Oklahoma, and there was another school on
South Carolina.
South Carolina. There were four. Yeah, four.
And I believe Miles Rice was raised in South Carolina before he moved down to Sandy Creek, Georgia.
And Florida's pretty. Gainesville's not that far from that place either. So I suspect Miles Rice.
But apparently he doesn't mind moving because he's been at Washington State. So I wouldn't think location's going to be the deciding factor. Need to get to our final break of hour number one. Slack, hang on. You're up when we come back here on the Thursday Drive.
Or email us at thedrive@espnau.com.
Welcome back into The Drive. Final few minutes of hour number one, and let's get right back to The Drive hotline. And Slack is up next. Hey, Slack.
Hey, guys. How y'all been?
Good, man. How about you?
Good to hear from you, Slack.
Good. I'm good. I heard you talking about the Pegues kid.
Uh-huh.
All right. Well, we're losing three guards, so we're really right back if we get Pegues. We got three guards because you got Denver Jones can play the point.
Yep.
My only hope is I hope Bruce breaks this cycle and go out and get some 6'5" or better size guys.
Wings, you mean guards/wings? Yeah.
Well, just guys more than 6 foot tall.
Now, Pegues will be undersized.
Some guys with some height, you know.
Pegues will be undersized against the biggest point guards.
And Tahad right. Pettiford's not going to be and, not going to give you any size.
Yeah. I mean, I'm talking about the next few three or four or five guys you're trying to bring in.
Mm-hmm.
What's the news on the 6'10" kid that came in for a visit a few weeks ago?
Now, I don't know what 6'10" kid came in. I was just looking at something that was pretty interesting. A kid that Auburn was involved with a few years ago, Jared Coleman Jones out of Middle Tennessee, is in the portal, and he's a guy Started his career at Northwestern, and I think he's got 1 year, but he's a guy that has shot threes. He's 6'10", a 44% three-point shooter, and that may be somebody that Auburn's interested in. But remind me who that 6'10 guy was. I remember hearing something, but I cannot recall.
Was he the number one guy in next year's class?
I think that may be the case. It was an underclassman. Because I was going to say, okay. I didn't think there'd been a big guy from the transfer portal that had visited. I'll do some checking on it.
All right. Thanks, guys.
Appreciate the call, Slack. Yeah, we will get to our top of the hour break.
I think it's going to be tough to recruit, just like we were talking about with, you know, Yolande Pegues' minutes dry up on the portal. I think if you retain Broome, it's going to be tougher to land. Although at the
four, this guy's a four.
That's true. At the four, man, you know, that's might still have some spots open.
All right, we're back with hour number two. Stick with us.
Live from Auburn, the sports capital of Alabama. This is The Drive. The Drive with Bill Cameron and Dan Peck on ESPN 106.7. And online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of The Drive, call 334-321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502. Or email The Drive at ESPNAU.com.
Welcome into hour number two of the Thursday Drive. Day one at the Masters. Look at that. Is that beautiful there? I mean, we're getting... they're able to even keep the clouds away and keep the sky blue.
Not so beautiful when the ball rolls to the patrons.
Or rolls in the water. But I'm not telling you, the scenery, it is just so picturesque. Favorite, Scottie Scheffler, making a push. He's birdied, I guess, his last two holes because he was 4-under through 14. He's now 6-under through 16. Just a shot back of Bryson DeChambeau. Those are your leaders right now. At Augusta, as we start hour number two here on the Thursday Drive. It's Bill and Dan with Drew at the controls, and we'd love for you to join in. You can call us on the Drive hotline, sponsored by Skybar, that number 334-321-1390.
You can also text the show 334-564-1840 on the Drive text box, presented by our friends at Southeastern Industrial Contractors.
Hour number two of the Drive brought to you by the good folks at the Orthopedic Clinic, East Alabama's go-to center for orthopedic care, with locations in Auburn and Opelika, on the web at orthoclinic.com. And let's get right to the Drive hotline, sponsored by Skybar. And Dan is up first. Hey, Dan.
Hey, guys.
Hey, Dan.
I have an interesting thought for you. Okay, so like in the NBA, you know, you don't really have a lot of true point guards. I mean, you got guys that are running the point that are, you know, I mean, you see LeBron James bringing the ball down the court sometimes. You got, I mean, guys are mainly shooters that are actually, you know, I mean, you want to call it whatever you want to call it. I mean, it's not necessarily having a point guard. So, you know, I looked at our team last year, assist guys was Chad Baker. And if you needed somebody to back up the point, I mean, he basically handled the ball, you know, distributing it a lot in the game. And he's quick. I mean, he's quick enough to cover the guards. I mean, I think he would be a good guard in general, whether he's a shooting guard or a point guard. But I don't see why you have to have, you know, a smaller guy that just brings the ball up the court.
Yeah, that's not a crazy thought. I mean, he was one of Auburn's he was one of Auburn's better facilitators a year ago. There's no question about it, and that was a huge loss there in the Yale game because of that.
And I'm just trying to think outside of the box. You know, if Janai comes back, which we're all hoping. You know, you could go big and have, you know, Cardwell playing the center, Janai at the four, and then you could basically, Janai could be like a 4-5, and then you could have Chaney be more of a 4-3. And then the guy coming in, Howard, I don't know if he's more of a small forward or if he's a guard, but, you know, you got a guys that are kind of tweeners in between. So I don't know if you necessarily have to have like just a true point guard. I mean, just shuffle it down and become a really big team. I mean, you're not going to be able to shoot over. If you're a regular guard or a point guard or even shooting guard, it's going to be hard to shoot over Chad. You know, I mean, defensively, it would be really tough to handle us.
You can try to make
some ideas.
You can try to. I mean, coaches are going to sort of positionless basketball, especially if they have skilled players on the wings that they sort of trust as primary ball handlers. You're still seeing, you know, most coaches in college basketball go with a player who is sort of the primary point guard, the quarterback of the offense, especially in the half court. You know, there's reasons for that. You know, sort of it's the player, sort of the same reason that you designate a player as the quarterback. Like it's the guy you want in charge of the offense when you run plays. You know, they're the one sort of tasked with calling it out. They're the one tasked with executing it at the beginning, at least, and getting the ball to where it needs to be. I think that it's a lot, even with skill at the other spots, to try to win without a true point guard is tough in modern college basketball. And I think you're seeing that with Bruce going out and pursuing guys like J.P. Pegues and Miles Rice to come in and be a role that you would think of as the primary point guard.
Yeah, and obviously I think you can scratch Miles Rice off the list now that he's not going to visit. And J.P. Pegues, I think, is going to commit to Auburn any time.
All right. It sounds good, guys.
Appreciate the call, Dan. Yeah, I mean, the only concerns you have sometimes is you want to make sure you've got someone who is very good at protecting the ball, handling the ball under pressure.
Right.
I mean, sometimes the smaller guys are just a little better because they don't have to bend over as far to get the ball close to the floor.
No, there's in the HBO Lakers show had a scene early, maybe it was the pilot, the first episode where they talked about.
I still have not watched that.
You know what? It lost me during season two, but it gets a little cutesy, you know, with its. The characters are breaking the fourth wall and talking to the screen and stuff, which I could live without. John C. Reilly's good. Enjoy John C. Reilly's work as usual. But there's a scene in the first episode where the Jerry West character talks about why he has doubts about Magic Johnson being able to succeed as a point guard in the NBA, and it's because he's 6'7" and the ball has to travel those extra inches, an extra foot, or an extra 8 inches.
And
it has to do that to get from the floor to his hand compared to a shorter point guard. And shorter point guards will be able to steal the ball in the time that it takes a Magic Johnson or someone of that size to try to. So there are pros and cons. There are shorter guards who have made it work in the NBA. Rondo just retired after an outstanding career. Chris Paul still playing at a high level in the NBA, and a lot of point guards. Even though the NBA has moved to a you need to be incredibly skilled and still have NBA skills and the prerequisite height. There are reasons why a lot of coaches are still going with the customary 6'1" to 6'4", maybe even shorter than that point guard who is the primary ball handler for the team.
Yeah. So,
but Auburn does have great offensive. I mean the passing of the. Of Denver Jones and Chad Baker-Mazzara and Jani Broome.
And Jani Broome, if he returns. Auburn has guys that are very good at making that extra pass. I mean, there were a couple of games where Jani was Auburn's leading assist man or the number two guy.
That's not a reason to go without a point guard. That's a reason to think, well, what if you add a point guard to that mix, a better point guard than Auburn had on last year's roster, with all due respect to both Aiden Holloway and Trey Donaldson.
Yep. So anyway, in case you weren't with us in hour number one, J.P. Pegues has canceled his visit that he had scheduled to Florida for this weekend. Miles Rice has canceled his visit to Auburn. It all signs, I feel like one of the Magic 8-Balls, all signs point to J.P. Pegues committing to Auburn very soon. 334-321-1390. That's the Drive hotline sponsored by Skybar. And Brett is up next. Hey, Brett.
Hey, Bill. I missed the first part of the show. Pegues, are you thinking he's coming to Auburn pretty sure because of Rice, or is there other things?
Well, a couple of things. Pegues has canceled a visit to Florida. Rice has canceled his visit to Auburn, and a couple of the recruiting services are comfortably putting Auburn in the lead for Pegues at the moment.
Okay, good. I didn't know about the canceling the Florida visit.
That's big.
Just my opinion, but I don't think Auburn needs or has to have a big point guard. If we got a 6'1", 6'2 point guard who can make shots, emphasize make some shots, and not turn the ball over, Auburn beat anybody.
Pegues was a 36% three-point shooter this past year at Furman, and like we were saying previously in the show, he attempted a three-pointer every 4 minutes or so that he was on the floor. He was willing to put it up there with the Paladins.
Yeah. I watched some film on him. Have y'all seen much film on him?
I'm watching some as we speak right now. Yeah, okay. I mean, I've seen him take it to the basket a few times, but he's more comfortable. He's more comfortable pulling up and taking the three. He's pretty good passer too, from what I've seen.
Yeah, that's what I thought. Last thing, I was listening to a couple of podcasts, different people who cover Auburn, and they were talking about Auburn's receivers, but they never even mentioned Jay Fair. I mean, the guy caught 30 balls last year, and we didn't have a receiver, nobody who could draw a double team. I mean, 30 balls, that's not all SEC, but, I mean, that's nothing to sneeze at. So do y'all not think that he's a good receiver? I mean, 30 balls, that's 30 balls.
I think Fair and Burton are both guys who – we'll see. Really, everybody who was back from. I mean, there's four receivers back from last year, right? Coy Moore, Camden Brown, Caleb Burton, Jay Fair.
And I will say this: of those four, Brett, I feel like Camden Brown is the guy that seemed to come on more and get more attention from the coaches and his fellow players there at the end, with the word that from Hugh Freeze that Auburn's going to pursue more receivers in the transfer portal. I really wonder the situation of those other
now,
three.
Now, Fair got his first taste of college football last year. You know, got to play for the first time after redshirting his first season, and they went to him a lot early, as I recall. Hugh Freeze talked about him a lot during fall camp before the season started. You know, it seemed like maybe other receivers, Var coming back, sort of took some snaps away because Var was injured for the first half of the season. But I think Jay Fair is somebody who, even though was not recruited by this coaching staff, which they might have an inclination to play the guys they brought in themselves. We'll see. But he's still somebody they were absolutely very excited about earlier in his Auburn career. I wouldn't write him off.
Right. These guys, once again, they cover Auburn, but they kind of made it sound like they expected a receiver or two to leave. Have y'all heard anybody rumored to be leaving?
Haven't heard any names, but just like I said, with Auburn's got 10 guys on scholarship right now when Perry Thompson and Malcolm Simmons get in. And if they're going after a couple more, I would think that means they expect a couple to leave.
And I would – my guess would be, and again, not to single out any one of those four guys – but I would think the four players that were the four receivers on the team. Well, Caleb Burton was a Hugh Freeze signee, but the other three, Fair, Coy Moore, Camden Brown, those three were signed by the previous coach. And so if they start to, you know, they start to feel like they're on the outside looking in for playing time, it would be understandable for players like that deep into their college football careers to maybe go somewhere else.
Right. I would guess more, if anybody. But anyway, all right, thanks a lot, fellas.
Appreciate it, Brett. 334-321-1390.
Is that a fair assessment, Bill, as far as, you know, it's more about the guys that would be not that.
Well,
someone Hugh Freeze signed could decide after a year, maybe.
Sure, they could. I just go more by what we saw in practice and the order in which the guys were taking snaps, taking reps. I mean, the guys that were not there in the first, especially in the first two groups, I'd say, yeah, they're probably more likely to be looking at opportunities for more playing time. 334-321-1390. We'll get to Yellowhammer before we get to our first break. Hey, Yellowhammer.
Hey, afternoon. Jumping on your thing about basketball and the point guard stuff. Why would it be a bad thing to have two point guards who are both always on the court so they're not having to worry about playing time, and you got two guys that are really good at handling the ball, and it sounds like a good thing to me.
Nothing's wrong with that. I mean, at least one of them needs to be a terrific shooter. It'd be great if you had two guys that were very comfortable running the show and could shoot and distribute the ball. You'd prefer that one of them not give you a big size disadvantage.
Yeah, though. What Dan was talking about. I mean, there are NBA teams that have, you know, sometimes they'll have three guys on the floor that have at least some experience being a point guard. You know, at some point, I mean, mm-hmm. it's like how the most athletic guy becomes quarterback.
Right,
you know,
in high school. Yeah, yeah.
Often a lot of guys in the NBA were at some point in their career the point guard for their teams, and so they got, you know, three or four guys on the floor with point guard experience and a post who probably never had to do that because he was he was just setting screens and rebounding. Well, but no, teams try that. But as Bill said, the big thing is you don't want to limit your team's ability to shoot because you have two point guards out there. And if you have two point guards and teams don't respect them as outside shooting, it can be really difficult for your offense to have enough spacing to function.
Well, I'm just talking about how you expressed a problem with one point guard being unhappy because the other guy getting all the time, that sort of thing.
Sure, but what I'm saying is if you try to play two point guards at the same time and defenses don't respect either of them as outside shooters, it could limit your offense.
We need respect,
It could limit your offense, yeah. You still need to be able to score.
Well, one last thing. I was curious about the transfer portal. You can go anywhere, anytime, all year long, or is there any kind of cap on that?
You can't go in, Yellowhammer. You are not eligible for the transfer portal.
The transfer,
I've been working out.
Yeah. You've been in the transfer portal for decades, Yellowhammer. All right. So,
and nobody's picked me up.
Yeah. Either. We're happy to have you. We're happy to have you here on the drive. All right. So what is your question per se about the portal?
Well, just the idea that is there any limitations, or can I say I'm a guy and I want to go somewhere any time of the year, anywhere, any team?
During the season, you cannot. There are windows where the portal is open.
Now, players can announce that they're going to enter the portal, but they can't officially get into the portal until their season is done.
If you're a football player and you want to leave the team that you're on, the rules are that you can wait until the season is over, and then the day that they announce the college football playoff field, the Monday after they set the field, the portal is open. You can go to your school. You can say you want to go in the transfer portal. They'll file the paperwork. Your name will appear on the database, and you will officially be in the transfer portal. There's another portal window that opens in April. And if the rules are a little bit different, if you've already earned an undergraduate degree, you can reopen your recruitment whenever you want. If your coach gets fired, you can reopen your recruitment whenever you want.
Before
the portal windows, that was one of the problems that led to the creation of the portal window. The idea that kids could announce whenever they wanted that they were available to be recruited. They could leave. Auburn had a quarterback a couple of years ago, Joey Gatewood, who left five, six weeks into the season. He announced that he was going to leave the team and reopen his recruitment because he wanted to play quarterback somewhere else next year, and he didn't want to get hurt. So it used to be more of the Wild West, and now it's a little bit more organized because there are only two times during the year when players can reopen their recruitments.
Well, then, in regard to football, in line with my idea that, and a lot of other people share this too, that your hopes for having a good season really depends on how strong you are on the line of scrimmage, on both sides of the line of scrimmage. So the question is then on offense, how much experience have we got there? And then on defense, how much depth have we got there? And that's my last one. Thank you very much.
Got a pretty good amount of experience on the offensive line as Auburn returns, four guys who started last year at some point on the offensive line, although one of them, Dylan Wade, started at left tackle. He's now moved into left guard. And they bring in a guy who'd been a two-year starter at Mississippi State at left tackle. So experience is not a huge concern. Connor Liu is a sophomore, but he was very impressive as a true freshman last year after he was moved into the starting rotation.
Your presumptive starting five right now, if you're looking left to right at Percy Lewis, Dylan Wade, Connor Liu, Jeremiah Wright, and Tutal. Like if those are your starting five, those are experienced SEC offensive linemen. They're getting the chance to spend the entire offseason working together as a unit. Beyond those five guys, the only one you've really got with play, I mean, Muskie and Tate Johnson,
are the
two offensive linemen that you would say on the roster who have played
a
significant amount of college football. Maybe Auburn would want to add one more, and have an eighth guy who would be But they don't have a ton of playing time to sell.
I think they're fine on the offensive line because they like some of the young guys that are building experience.
I've heard positive things about – we were talking about Tyler Johnson.
Yes, we've heard good things about both Auburn High kids.
Seth Wilford is someone
Braden Joyner and E.J. Harris.
Right. So there are some there's a young center too, right? I'm thinking of Connor Lou. Maybe that's the defensive line where they've got, because to pivot to the defensive line question there, I think Auburn is going to play a rotation of guys, and they're going to have strict, you're playing 15, 20 snaps max because you're dealing with big dudes too. Jason Jones, Trill Carter, Gage Keys, Malik Blockton, Bobby Jamison Travis, Zykevious Walker, DJ Reed.
T.J. Lindsey. A lot of young guys, though. A lot of young guys with Lindsey, Amaris Williams, Jamonte Waller, guys up front where Auburn could still use – they could still use some more experience. That's why, again, Hugh Freeze said defensive line, wide receiver. That's where he wants more depth. That's what makes me think somebody's leaving on the wide receivers. Don't have to feel that way needing more players on the defensive line.
And some, you know what, guys could be leaving on the defensive line too. Because if you're a veteran defensive lineman, and I'd say especially a guy that wasn't you've been around for a couple of years and you don't look like you're going to be in line for too many snaps in the rotation, or they're recruiting someone to replace you in the rotation, you could see some attrition on the defensive line too. I'm excited about, I'll tell you what, Bill. Bobby Jamison Travis is a guy that since he got here, right, is somebody that's like, you know what, let's see what and he played. I know a couple of the writers voted him defensive player in the 8A game on Saturday. So that's a defensive line. There's been some buzz about, understandable why he didn't contribute in year one, right, with the late arrival junior college guy. But there seems to be a lot of talent there and a guy that they like.
All right, we need to get to our first break. Spectre, hang on, you're up first. Who else do we have? Spectre and John, you'll be the first two when we come back here on the Thursday Drive.
Bet online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of the drive, call 334-321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502 or email the drive at ESPNAU.com.
Welcome back into the drive. Let's get right back to the drive hotline. And Spectre is up next. Hey, Spectre.
Hey, guys. Listen, a couple of things to talk about. Perry Thompson, is he in school?
No. He's finishing up high school. Should be done next month.
Auburn.
And be here. I would imagine for the first summer term, but I know that he's just finishing up high school.
Auburn signed four receivers coming out of high school. Two of them enrolled early and went through spring practice. That is Bryce Kane and Cam Coleman. Perry Thompson and Malcolm Simmons will join the team this summer.
Okay, how does that work when some of them enroll early and some of them don't?
So it's a matter of you can work with your, especially if you're a student athlete, you can work with your high school to take the prerequisite course load, like take your entire senior class's course load during the summer and fall. Before so that you're finished before the spring semester starts, you can take extra coursework because you want to graduate from your high school early and you want to enroll in college in January. Not to generalize too much, but football players are often the players we hear about, the people we hear about doing this the most, because there's an upside to, you can get on the field. You're more likely to get on the field if you go through spring practice with your team.
Yeah. Okay. I just want to get that cleared out.
They make it sound really easy, though. Bill, you know some people who work in
academics.
Yeah,
it's funny. People just feel like, if I want to finish early, I'll finish early. It's not that easy. You need to have things, in good shape for you to be able to take the extra load and graduate.
Yeah, whether you're going to skip your spring semester of your senior year or skip your senior year entirely, which we've seen athletes do as well, people make it sound like, all you got to do is reclassify. All you got to do is,
I want to be
check a couple of boxes and you can skip your senior year and go to college a year early. And it's like, I think there's more to it than that, Spectre.
Okay. that sounds good. Both of you put your thinking caps on this one.
Uh-oh.
Bruce Pearl, his situation as far as being in the hunt for the Kentucky job, has there ever been an Auburn coach that was successful where he was at and left Auburn for another team without being ran off?
Has an Auburn coach ever been poached by another program in a marquee sport?
Football,
right,
or basketball?
I do not think so.
I think it happened in swimming.
Yes,
it?
I was going to say swimming. It did. Texas.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah,
and it's happened with football assistants. Like, I mean, I remember like Muschamp was one that comes to mind, where Muschamp was incredibly popular and left to be a defensive coordinator somewhere else, and there was a belief that
Gene Chizik.
Well, wasn't it Texas with both of them?
Yes, it was.
Did Texas come in?
It was Texas with swimming and Texas twice with coordinators.
So, yes, Texas is coming.
But not as far as head coaches.
But not head coaches, no.
Okay, great. So I wouldn't think Pearl would do that.
I'll say this though, Spectre. I don't know if there's ever been a time in history when Kentucky would seriously consider the Auburn coach before when they have a vacancy.
I agree 100%.
I don't think there's ever been a time ever where Kentucky had a vacancy and they would say, "Hey, what about the guy coaching Auburn
in Kentucky basketball?"
In basketball,
yes.
Like, I don't think that's
Kentucky
ever,
football has definitely been in that situation.
In the long storied history of Kentucky basketball, I don't think that's ever happened.
No.
Well, is there any coach in the SEC that Kentucky would go after?
Sure.
You mean besides Bruce?
Yeah. I do think that Nate Oates would be very attractive to Alabama, and I think that's one of the reasons Alabama's done everything they can to try to lock him down.
You know what? I think that it's early to go get Todd Golden from Florida. Is it Golden mm-hmm. Florida? Like, I think it would be early to go get him. But he's an excellent coach. Florida's new coach, who learned from Bruce, among others. Is also an excellent basketball coach, would do well. I think that any of those, you know, and even, you know, I bet Buzz Williams would probably do well, although the style would be a bit of an odd fit for mm-hmm. Kentucky basketball. But you know what? Maybe they need to change styles up. Maybe they need to play something a little bit more defensive oriented at Kentucky in order to achieve what they haven't been able to achieve the last couple of years.
Okay. Any word on Janai Broome?
No, we were just
somebody I am not familiar with
has tweeted out that he's hearing Janai is going to enter the transfer portal. Now, I can't put any credence in that. I just was informed that there's a guy who claims he is a recruiting person named Caleb Benson is saying he's hearing Janai will enter the portal soon. I had not heard anything about that or anything like that until this person.
But now, having said that, the basketball transfer portal is open.
Yes,
the window is still open that opened after the season ended. And so if Janai Broome wanted to reopen his recruitment and play another year of college basketball wherever he wanted to go, he would be within his rights to do that. He could say, I'm coming back to college basketball, but I'm going to go
But I'm going to check the transfer portal. Players can do that now, too. If they're very sure that they're still wanted by their school, they can almost use that as a bargaining
chip. Now, what Janai Broome can't do is that he cannot, because he's already tested the NBA draft waters a couple of times, he cannot declare for the draft and then come back to college basketball. He's used up those opportunities. So we will know. I think we're already – it already sounds like Janai Broome is playing college basketball next year, but we would know for sure when he is not on the draft list on April 27th. That's the deadline to get into the draft. But he could go into the portal, and if he did, there would be a –
He would be one of the, literally and figuratively biggest targets that there's ever been in the portal.
If you watch The Price is Right, when there's a car on the Showcase Showdown, Janai Broome would be the new car on the Showcase Showdown that everybody wants to win.
Yeah, I heard that rumor too. But if he's coming back to college football, basketball, I think that he would take another year at Auburn.
Oh, I haven't heard anything that would indicate that Janai hasn't been very happy.
I mean, if you took a vote among Auburn fans, I think that's absolutely what folks would like to see. It's just a matter of whether or not that's what he's going to do.
Yeah, that tournament game really did something to him. I think he's wanting something to prove here. And if he can get a good guard play out of it, he'll come back. I think he's waiting around to see what we're going to do at guard.
And he would be one of the more – I mean, I don't know the I don't know if Auburn's ever brought back I don't know if Auburn's ever had a situation with a preseason first-team All-American. Like a – I mean, a is that rarefied air for Auburn men's basketball?
Yeah, maybe Charles.
Maybe Charles? I mean, it's been – so we're going decades at least.
We're going 40 years.
40 years at least since Auburn's had a preseason first-team All-American. I think you could very well have that if Jahni Broome is on your roster and he's playing college basketball next year.
All right. That's to you guys.
Appreciate it, Spector. Hey, we're running behind. Need to get to our bottom of the hour break. We'll be back with the calls, but we've got to go ahead and take care of business. Stick with us for the final half hour of the Thursday Drive.
With Bill Cameron and Dan Peck on ESPN 106.7 and online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of the drive, call 334-321-1390, toll free at 888-382-7502, or email the drive at ESPNAU.com.
Welcome back into the drive. Final 20 minutes or so here on this Thursday, and let's get right back to the drive hotline. John's been hanging on for a while. Hey, John, thanks for holding.
Hey, guys, how y'all doing?
Doing fine.
I'll be real quick. I got a couple questions. First, as far as coaches who left Auburn, Dole left as AD, right, not a coach?
That, you broke up right then. Who'd you say, John?
Dole Eves.
Yes. I believe he left. He had retired from coaching and was in the athletic department and moved to Georgia as AD.
Okay, another coach who I think left for a better job was John Heisman.
Yeah, well, that's a little before my time, but you're right. Yeah, you're right. Yeah.
Well, a little before
you're right.
My
time. I should not have said but yes.
We were
way back in the day.
We were mostly discussing stuff that's happened since World War
One. Okay.
Since World War One broke out.
No, but you're right. You're absolutely
right.
But
you're
John.
Right. You know, you got us there. John Heisman did jump to Clemson.
Well, that's something, you know, when you're sitting around all day doing nothing, you start thinking about things. But a football player I was wondering about is DeAndre Carter. Did he come to Auburn? Or I know he's really highly thought of, and I haven't heard his name
He's one of four high schoolers that'll be coming in May or June. He's one that wasn't an early enrollee. They are really, really excited about him. When we talked to Jake Thornton, he's really excited about getting him in. But, yeah, there were just four. We mentioned the two receivers. There was Drake Carter, and then there was a defensive back. Amon Langanis, I believe, was the fourth, and everybody else was in school early. That's crazy to think. Remember, a few years ago, nobody would – I mean, there weren't any early enrollees just 10 years ago.
Never. That's right. Well, I'll let you get back to the rest of your college.
Man, good hearing from you, John. Take care.
All right. Later.
334-321-1390, and Tex is next. Hey, Tex.
Hey, Bill. Hey, Sheldon.
Hey, Tex, it's Thursday. You know what that means? It's a new young Sheldon tonight on CBS.
It's baseball tonight. That's what Tex knows. That's what it means.
Exactly.
I feel like all the series now, it's like, I feel like, you know, last week, I think I said it was the third straight. It was three out of four since last week. I mean, hey, I was there. I was out there over the weekend. But it's feeling like we're playing more of these Thursday through Saturday than we are Friday through Sunday.
I think we had six episodes left of Young Sheldon before the finale.
Okay, God, I'm not using that anymore if we're going to have to talk about that show. So anyway, I won't be there this week because I have a previous engagement that I have to be at this weekend in Central Florida. So.
We're gonna go tonight, but Matt and Ariel are out of town, so I don't know about the rest of the weekend because we've got Kennedy duty, which is not duty.
I apologize to people, but my tickets are being used by some of the people that sit around me for this weekend.
Good.
They're taking grandkids, which is really cool. So I've been thinking about and listening to all the talk about, are we going to lose this? Are we going to lose that? And my first thought came to leadership. And I would tell you, we have a very progressive AD who I think cut a really good deal to get out from underneath Under Armour and move to Nike. Number one. Number two, because I will tell you, most people under the age of about 25 much prefer Nike over Under Armour. Number two, He's been very good about hires and willingness to do things such as upgrades at the baseball field, upgrades, talking about making upgrades in the football stadium. I would be surprised, completely surprised, if Bruce were to take another job, even though it's Kentucky. But he would be moving to a place, well, it has a great tradition. And I've changed jobs before in my life. I only ever did it because I thought it was best for me. I just thinking from that mindset, what is best for me, that I don't think Bruce is going anywhere. That's number one.
No, I don't disagree with you, and I would be very, very surprised. But for people to just act like, well, there's no way that Kentucky, that he'd even listen. I think you listen. I understand Kentucky being interested, if that were the case.
Kentucky's like a hurricane swirling in the Gulf of Mexico, right? Where it could be, wherever it's pointed, like they're going to make a real, they're going to make a splash wherever it is. And in the case, if they decide they want your coach, your coach has a very serious decision to make. Even if it's Dan Hurley, even if it's Scott Drew, and I think that would also be the case if Kentucky, if they had Bruce Pearl in their sights.
I thought you were going to say they're like a hurricane full of hot air and wetness. So anyway, here's my contingency plan. I think the man for the job to keep the trend going in the direction it is, to keep the excitement around the program, if Bruce Pearl was to leave, I would hire Will Wade and wouldn't hesitate. We've done it before with a coach that may have had an issue that really wasn't a really big issue when it was said and done. And it's no longer an issue. And there's one thing about him. He can recruit and he can coach.
He's going to get a job. He's going to get a bigger job before too long. And there's another thing in there, and that Auburn has hired some guys that have had baggage before. And, hasn't deterred them from going out and getting who they felt was the best person. Hoping Auburn's not having to worry about replacing Bruce for quite a while.
I don't think that's going to be the case, but as always, you always got to have a contingency plan.
Oh, yeah.
And I know ADs keep lists, and he would be at the top of mine, even though I didn't like him when he was LSU because he was coaching and beating our butt a lot, so made it kind of difficult on us. But on baseball, who's going for us tonight?
Dylan Watts.
Yep.
Dylan Watts, okay. It's going to be very interesting, and I heard the discussion early on about the wind. That creates weird things happen, especially when the sun goes down.
Oh, yeah.
That wind stays up. That's going to be interesting to see. And I'm assuming we're on TV tonight if it's a Thursday night game.
Yeah, I haven't looked because we were going to be over there, but, yeah, I figure it is.
All right, guys. Hey, I appreciate it. Y'all are doing a great job. Talk to you later.
Appreciate the call. Text 334-321-1390.
I would throw out there, I think the Will Wade is an inspired idea if in the event of a vacancy at Auburn. I would also mention that shortly before John Cohen came to Auburn, he had to fill a vacancy for Mississippi State's men's basketball coach when Ben Howland retired and he hired Chris Jans. So I would say there's a very, very recently John Cohen searched far and wide. And granted, it's Mississippi State. It's not Auburn. But very recently, John Cohen searched for a basketball coach and landed on Chris Jans. If, Bill, again, we're several steps down the line here. If Auburn were looking for a coach in the event of, Bruce Pearl, would you be all that shocked if John Cohen thought maybe Chris Jans was the man for the job here, too, after hiring him from New Mexico State to come take over?
That would make sense. If you've hired someone and you're pleased with what you saw as a result, then sure.
And I think stylistically, there's some similarities between the kind of basketball Chris Jans wants to play and what Bruce Pearl has done at Auburn these last couple of years.
Yep. Before we get to our final break, well, we're gonna get Jerry before we get to that as well. See a couple of notes posted by Nathan King at Auburn and Recover there at 247, pointing out a couple of the things. He has some insights, saying that it looks like Trey Donaldson appears to be close to committing to Michigan.
Hey, I wondered. We mentioned yesterday that Michigan apparently had been in, maybe this was on the Ferguson podcast, that Michigan and Michigan have been in play for both Holloway and Donaldson.
Mm-hmm.
You wonder if Dusty May recruited either of those guys when he was at FAU. Not all that long ago. I mean,
Trey's from Tallahassee.
I would think that maybe Dusty, I mean, and granted, Trey was also seen as a major conference player most of his career, but I could see Dusty May having maybe been experienced with Trey Donaldson's work before taking mm-hmm. this Michigan job. And you know what? Dusty May has a pretty good track record of finding players that are going to work for him and making it work these last couple of years. So that would be an interesting opportunity for Trey Donaldson up in Ann Arbor.
All right, we'll get to Jerry before we get to our final break this afternoon. Hey, Jerry.
Hey, guys. I've been watching the Masters. I just wanted to update you that Scotty Scheffler had just finished his round at 6-under. So he's one but behind DeChambeau.
And of course, he was the heavy favorite heading in. So he's in very, very good shape.
Yeah, I think so. That's going to be a real battle to watch, though.
Yeah, it's always fun. I mean, usually there's a couple of names that are up there really early, and it's like you wonder whatever happened to them, if they even do make the cut. I mean, I got a few more familiar names up there at the top, but Scotty, off to that start, especially in this wind. I mean, that's very, very impressive.
But right now, Scheffler and Bryson considerably ahead of the rest when you look at the live odds.
Yeah, and Danny Willett's
tomorrow
two shots back.
It's supposed to be even worse. The winds. Just curious, have y'all ever been?
I have not.
I've been to Augusta. I've never been to Augusta.
I've never been on the course. I will say this.
A transmission fail in Augusta, Georgia.
Spent
a day there.
If you remember a while back, we had my nephew who had invented the putt link, the smart golf ball that tracks your putting speed and everything. He and his son, who is an outstanding junior golfer, are over there watching round one today. So I'm a little jealous. Well,
I've been to two practice rounds, and it's the most beautiful place on the earth.
It is amazing. There is not, I mean, I hate watching it because it makes me think, man, my yard's just an absolute mess, and I'm very ADD about that. I know, but I can't even have, you know, 6 feet of my yard that looks anything like that course. I mean, there's never a leaf or a, you know, anything there.
I asked a guy that went yesterday, and I said, "Do you see any, paper or garbage?" Or
no,
he said nothing.
With this wind, it's amazing today. They're keeping it. I mean, they're still keeping it immaculate with the wind that's out there.
I said, "Did you even see a pine cone?" And he said, "Not unless it dropped in the last 5 minutes."
And if it did, it probably won't be there in another 5 minutes.
No, they got rabbits running around picking all that stuff up. Well, good to hear from you guys.
All right, appreciate it, Jerry. We'll get to our final break of the afternoon. Still time for you to join in here on the Thursday Drive.
Inspired by the bold button.
Cameron and Dan Peck on ESPN 106.7 and online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of the drive, call 334-321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502 or email the drive at ESPNAU.com.
Welcome back into the drive here. Final few minutes on this Thursday, and something we have not mentioned. I had not heard this till I saw this story, and we need to get him on. Matt Simo announcing that he is retiring, stepping down after this year as head coach of Auburn High baseball. Saw Matt at a Christmas party, and he said he was thinking about it. And I went, no, you can't be about to
32 years,
and he still looks like a kid. But I mean, state titles, 2009, 10, 18, and 21, member of the Alabama Coaches Hall of Fame, and just the little things. if you don't see him, that the little things, that's always been his thing. But an excellent coach, great guy. He pointed out that he was with D-Mark, I guess, this morning, and like I said, we definitely need to get him on. But he talked about with 3 years of college baseball, 9 years of minor league baseball, and 32 years of this. Well, you know what, Simo, you probably played a little baseball before you were in college too. But he's talking about that's 44 years just of college, professional, and then coaching high school baseball.
He's given a lot to the game, given a lot to helping his players develop into better people and well, better and,
you know
and
what?
Better athletes.
He probably said something about this the other day. Scott was at the Auburn High baseball Letterman's. They had a big gathering Saturday.
He coached Scott?
Oh yeah.
And they still put him in the Hall of Fame?
Yeah, amazing. Hey, Scott.
I know. No, Scott can wasn't bad. Scott could go. No, I know.
But yeah. So, congratulations, and man, it's going to be hard to imagine Auburn High baseball without. Without Matt Singer.
I mean, congratulations doesn't really do it justice, right? No. For like the run he's had, and you're right. We absolutely need to have him on. Big series going on? Is it this? I think it's they got three games with Central.
Yep.
Starting real soon. I think one today, two tomorrow. I want to say something like that. So
always, yeah. That is always the big series.
And that's AU 100, right? For high school baseball.
Yep. Hey, tomorrow, don't forget we're at Baumhauer's. On the line's going to be there. We're there. Coach Don Dunn's going to join us as well. Hope you will. We're out of time here on the Thursday Drive. Have a good one, everybody. We are out of here.